to Everything Fraser Coast. I'm Jussie Lindeberg, your host. And as I travel around the Fraser Coast looking for positive stories, I meet the most amazing and incredible people living in our community. So recently I had a plumber come to my house and he was sent in to, I can't even remember what to do. What did you do, Jeff?
I put in a toilet for you.
Oh, that's right. The toilet. How could I forget that? It was a toilet installation. So I must say that I did put you up on a pedestal for fixing my toilet.
Yeah, no, that's what I do.
Ha ha, do you get my pun?
I do.
Up on a pedestal. Okay, so, and as I do, I just started talking to Jeff and Jeffrey Laver, who's in my studio today, and he actually said a little bit about his background, and I went, oh my gosh, Jeff, you've got to come and talk to me because you've got an amazing story to share. And I'm going to be totally honest, and thank you so much, Jeff, for coming in today. So I'll just say that first.
That's okay.
And today is our take two. And I'm going to put pressure on you now. Whenever we do a take two, it's always better.
I'm ready.
You're ready? Good. Okay, so first of all, Jeff, so how long have you lived in the Fraser Coast?
I moved up here in 2013 from Sydney.
Yeah. And so you were born and bred in Sydney?
No, I was born and bred in Goulburn, but we moved at an early age to Macquarie Fields, which is in the western suburbs of Sydney.
Yep. And have you lived anywhere else around Australia?
No, mainly stayed in that area, in the MacArthur area, and no, not at all.
And so I really love to know, why do people end up, well, I'm not saying this is the end of your life, but how do you find yourself here in the Fraser Coast?
I love it. I love the climate, and the relaxed atmosphere. And there's just so much at your doorstep that you can do.
Yeah. And I understand that you like motorbikes.
I do.
So, and you've got a bit of a collection starting.
Yeah, I've got a motorcycle I've had for 40 years, which is a BMW R650, and it's it is slowly growing. I've got another couple of bikes that I'm working on at the moment.
Yeah, I actually expected you to turn up on your motorbike today, and I was going to video you coming up the driveway, and that was going to be my little grab for you. But then you turned up in a ute.
Yeah, well, at the moment they're getting some work done to them, so
it's a missed opportunity, Jeff. Hey, but you shared a story about your time in Antarctica with me, and that's what I'd really love for you to be able to share with everybody, because it's a very interesting and amazing experience you had back in 2010, and a second one a couple of years later. So are you happy to share a bit of that story?
Yeah, sure.
So back in 2010, you told me that it was your first trip to Antarctica, but how on earth do you wake up one day and go, hey, I'm a plumber, and geez, I might just see if I can get a job in Antarctica. Like, were you running from the police or what?
No, well, not really. But no, when I was building a home, one of the builders had talked about going to Antarctica, and he was getting ready, he got selected, he was very excited about it, and I didn't think nothing of it at the time. But then as time went on, for whatever reason, I was looking at the SEEK website, and I come across this thing about going to Antarctica, and I thought, well, I'll see how I go. So I put an application in, and they rang me up and asked me to come down to Tasmania and go through a selection centre.
Isn't that amazing? Just, I picked up on that you were talking to a builder who put it in your peripheral mind of this. I wonder if you hadn't had that random conversation, if that job had come up, if you'd even really thought about that being an opportunity for you. Isn't that just one of those do-do-do-do moments?
That's right. It's just like destiny, I suppose.
Yeah. So obviously, well, we know that you went to Antarctica. So what was that process like in applying to get the job?
Well, they flew me down to Sydney, down to Hobart, and for 2 days we had to do all these scenarios, and we had to problem solve as a group, and we had to talk a little bit about ourselves, and there was a selection panel of about 8 people, and then our group would have been about 20 at the time, and they just took notes and seeing how we all react, worked together and whatnot.
Was there a really strange scenario that they threw you into to really test you?
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah, no, really, were pretty thorough. They really made you think about a lot of things that you wouldn't normally think about, and put you in situations where you had to deal with it. You had no one else that could really help because you only had that core group. And it was quite draining. I come out of there mentally exhausted, to be quite honest. Well, I'll give you an example. They had a painted a scenario where there was a severe storm coming, and then they had this great big crane that had been already set up, and that in the processes of trying to batten down the hatches, the crane operator got injured. And the scenario was, what do we do? Do we carry on and try and fix the crane to a situation where it can cope with the weather coming, or do we just leave it and don't do nothing about it, or something like that? So some people will say, well, you know, I've got an idea of how to use the crane. I'll get up and make it safe. And some people would say, oh, no, just leave it. It's what we've got to worry about ourselves and protect ourselves. So that sort of stuff.
So how long did that go for?
2 days.
Okay, so an intense 2 days. Yeah. And so what followed on from that?
Well, what happened then, I didn't think I'd done any good, to be quite honest. I'd come back and was still reflecting on what had happened and just put it to the back of my mind. But probably about 4 days later, I got a phone call saying, we'd like to offer you a position. And now they also said that you'll have to go and do a medical and a psychological test.
Well, okay, so that's a bit scary. How did you pass the psychological test?
Well, my mate said, that's it, Tull, you're gone now.
That twitch you have, you know, yeah. And that.
I said, you know, you got no chance now.
Okay, so clearly you passed both of those.
Yep.
Yep. So, and how quickly were you then shipped off to Antarctica? Was that next?
It is a very bit of a process. Like, it's all well thought out, because then once you get to that point, you do have to undergo some training down in Tasmania before you do depart. So you got to get your affairs in order fairly quickly in the space of probably about 2.5 months, I suppose. And then the next phase was to go down and do the training down in Tasmania.
So that training's got to be more than, like, you're obviously going there already with your profession. So they've employed you, I'm assuming, as a plumber, is that correct?
Yeah, mechanical plumber, yeah.
Mechanical plumber. So they're not now training you to obviously be a plumber. What are they training you for?
Well, to give you an example, the training went on for about a month. I had to learn how to ride quad bikes, got my forklift ticket, front end loader tickets, tele handler ticket. We touched on confined space.
That sounds fun.
It was.
Were you getting paid to do this?
I know. And then we had to get familiar with the computer systems, working at height.
But what about the cold weather? Like, was there training on actually how to cope with the cold weather?
Well, we were trained in, like, in a way where we spoke about the different layers in our clothing, but we never really get done the training for the cold weather until we got down on base.
And when it's too late, run, Jeff, run. Can you say, hey, I want to go back now. You didn't train me on the minus 40?
No, you can't. Although I suppose you could come back if you got down there at the time. If it was that bad, you know, there would have been an opportunity to do that, but that rarely happens. I mean, sometimes people get down there and they get sick, so they do have to come back.
Yeah, okay. So you've gone through your training for a few months?
About a month.
And so you've got to get your affairs in order to head down there. And how long is your tour of duty down in Antarctica?
I left for training in October, from memory, and then we never got back until towards the end of April following year.
You've gone through this training, and are you with a group of people that are also going with you? Like, you're a whole crew?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
What's the energy in that?
Oh, it's very diverse, people that are very good at what they do and highly qualified, and also people that have the same sort of interests and similarities, I suppose. They're pretty good at making sure that all works.
So what do you mean? Are you saying that you're fond of nature and learning, like, geology?
Yeah, partly. And I think it's also been an outdoors person and a hands-on person as well.
Yeah.
And somebody that can can accept others for who they are.
Yeah. So would it be a benefit to be an outdoors person, or would it be a benefit to be an indoors person working in Antarctica?
We really need both, really, because there is times where you can't go outdoors.
Yeah.
And you can be confined. So it's a bit of both. You need to be able to deal with the harshness of the environment, but it also the isolation as well, which is a big part.
So we're heading towards Antarctica now, and how long is the flight from Hobart?
Well, that's right. Well, I went down via Hobart in an Airbus, and we flew for nearly 5 hours and landed on the Ross Sea at McMurdo, in the American base, and then from there we're going to be transported by Hercules to Casey, which is about another 5 hours flight. But yeah, that was the original plan, but it went a bit pear-shaped because of when we flew from that leg from McMurdo to Casey, there was problems with the aircraft, and we had to return. We couldn't land at the Casey ice runway on the plateau, so we had to come back and wait for another time to go back down again.
Yeah, so you just said that you landed at the US base. I'm incredibly naive about Antarctica. I know nothing other than it's very white, and I guess there's a lot of seals, and maybe, are there killer whales?
There's plenty of wildlife.
Yeah, so, and penguins, but there's Americans down there. I didn't know there was an American base in Antarctica.
Oh, yeah, it's one of the larger bases. To give an example, the Australian bases in the summer season may have up to 120 people. Well, McMurdo, they have 2,000.
Wow. Is there any other nationality bases down there, other countries?
Yeah, most countries are represented. You got the Chinese, the Russians, the English, the Indians.
So who owns Antarctica?
Well, from what I understand, 40% of it is sort of Australian, but yeah, it's a question.
Who controls the leasehold? Who financially benefits from these countries taking occupation and on this land?
Well, it's all about preservation and learning about science and keeping it pristine.
Is it okay? It is really about science. Yes. Are you winking?
No.
Okay. Jeff, when you've gone down, you're at, McMurdo, is the American base?
Yeah.
So what's the American base like?
It's
I'm picturing big dome buildings connected with tunnels. I'm kind of picturing Matt Damon on Mars. My favourite male actor. Sorry, I'm just going to start thinking about Matt Damon now. Pretending you look like Matt Damon. And you know when he grew potatoes and he had to actually put his hand in the feces collected from the people and grow potatoes? Did you ever do anything like that?
Oh, not quite, but they did turn all the feces and that into bricks.
Oh, really? People poo into bricks?
They did, and they would transport them back to the America, yeah. So that they weren't living in a pollution.
Oh, okay. So they'll turn into bricks just for transporting, for building homes down in New Orleans.
No.
Oh, thank goodness.
I don't know what they'd done with them when they took them back. But
yeah. Were they actually like, okay, is bricks code for like laying a cable?
I didn't actually get to see it because I wanted to do a tour on it.
Oh, of course you do. Well, it wouldn't smell because it's so cold, right?
But I mean, I did get the chance to see a lot of other stuff. No, the American base is just like a little town, pretty much. Got all these buildings that are all separated with different activities, like accommodation, and then you got your mess for meals and whatnot.
You're stuck at McMurdo because of the weather. So how do you kill your time? What do you do?
Well, it was quite good. We got inducted into the site by their management, and they gave us a map and pretty much said, well, look, you can just explore the base at your own leisure, that just don't get outside of these boundaries.
So what adventures did you have at McMurdo taking you away from the campsite?
Well, we just went around and had a look at all the plant and machinery and whatnot. They have a large consistency of aircraft down there. We climbed up on the hill or watched the Hercules land and take off on the ice. Scott's hut's there, so we managed to go and have a look at that, which is a bit like walking back in time.
Ken, so if you were to travel by Antarctica by ship, do you have to moor your big ship out and get a little boat to shore, and then you're stepping onto ice? Because there wouldn't be a sandy beach to step onto.
No, that's right. Yeah, no, you do. That's exactly what I mean. When, trying to think now, when we come to Casey, I flew there, so I didn't come from ship. But when at Davis, we actually ploughed into the ice, and the ice would have been probably about 1.5 metres thick, and then we just had a ladder and walked onto the ice.
Wow. Oh, I have seen that in, like, documentaries or movies. They actually have icebreakers at the front of the ships.
Yeah.
Oh, how scary is that? No, really?
No,
you don't
really
think for a second the ship's going to fail and you're going to end up in the icy water?
No.
Wow.
You have confidence in what you get told and your training.
So, take us to Casey.
Okay, so
we ended up being
4 days at McMurdo, and then we flew when the weather was right to Casey, and that well went uneventful. We landed there on the ice plateau.
So how do you land a plane on the ice? Is it a regular plane with regular wheels?
No, it has skis.
Oh, wow. How big is this plane? Like, how many people?
It's a Hercules. We would have been about 25 of us in the plane, I suppose.
So does the plane has skis all the time, takes off with skis and lands with skis?
That's right, yeah.
Oh, how cool is that?
Yeah. That was pretty good. And when we landed, they opened the back hatch and then they accelerated, and then this cargo come flying out the back, and then you could just see this great big gaping hole in the back of the plane. That was pretty amazing. And then we got picked up by a bus when we were taken to base.
I'm actually confused. So what are you saying? You land and cargo comes out the back?
Well, they had a big crate that was strapped in the middle of the plane with supplies.
Yeah.
And for that to get that cargo out, they'd land the plane, then while still in motion, they'd unstrap it, and then they'd open up the back door and then accelerate, and then with the momentum, the crate just goes sliding out the back.
Okay, not a good time to have your belt caught in the crate or to stand in the wrong spot.
No, not at all. And so then there was a bus called Priscilla on tracks waiting for us. It picked us up and took us to it for about a 25-minute run into Casey Station.
Yeah. And so you must have been pretty excited. Like, you're there to work, but it's still got to be quite exciting.
Yeah, no, it's all very exciting, all new, and you're learning something new all the time.
Yeah.
And then we met the existing people on base that had been there for the winter, which is only a small group of roughly about 20-25 people, I suppose.
Oh, so you're there in the summer?
Yeah, that's right. This
is okay. So is it – now, don't laugh at me, because I've lived in Canada and through a ski season, and Easter time, as the snow's starting to melt, you actually ski in T-shirts and
– That's right.
So is it like that over there?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Although you do have those cold snaps when there comes a blizzard.
Yeah.
You get the wind chill factor. But, yeah, but a lot of the time it is like that, yeah. You can just scoot around with a short sleeve shirt.
Yeah. And so you did do some skiing, cross-country skiing?
Yeah,
down
I did.
There?
Yeah, done a lot of cross-country skiing, which I really enjoyed. I found that great. We did use quad bikes quite a bit. And another vehicle we used was called a Haglen, which is an all-terrain vehicle specifically made to go over ice and snow.
So were the quad bikes traditional quad bikes?
Pretty much, yeah. They were. Yeah, they had heated handlebars and had, like, guards for wind protection on their hands.
But they still had the regular
tires. Got back here, yeah.
Okay. So your role at Casey was as the, what are you
called? I was mechanical plumber. I looked after the sewage treatment plant, making of water, and general maintenance, like maintaining pumps and seals and valves, anything like that that was looked like it needed fixing, we'd pull it apart and fix it.
Like any position, I guess, down at Antarctica on one of these bases, it's a critical position. So you're an important piece of the puzzle like everybody.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, we all got to look out for each other, and sometimes we need to help with others in their expertise and come together as a group. But yeah, pretty much we all do our stuff to keep the whole place in operation.
And how did you find working in your trade in such a different environment? You don't have a plumbing fitting shop just down the road, and you've got extreme temperature differences and environments, and even just the whiteness of snow. How did all that impact on you doing your job?
Well, you had to. I mean, they did have quite a substantial amount of spare parts and different equipment that regularly breaks down, so that wasn't too bad. It's like going to your Bunnings store, but in-house Bunnings store, I suppose you could say. They have a shed full of lots of different stuff, so most of the time you could find what you needed and had it. But then sometimes, though, if you didn't have it, you had to maybe improvise and use maybe a few other things to make it work.
Yeah. And did the cold temperatures ever impact on you?
Yeah, no, it did. I mean, there has been times where you couldn't go outside. The weather was during blizzards and that, and it was blowing gale force, and visibility was nil. So there was quite a few times where we had that.
Yeah, but just even manipulating nuts and bolts and pipes and things, I'm imagining you're wearing pretty decent gloves.
Oh, yeah. No, we have all the proper clothing, and it's all about the layers. You start off with your underwear, and then you got your thermals, and then you got your outer layer, and then you got another layer and another layer again. And
little marshmallow man running around fixing pipes.
So according, depending on what the weather's doing, it'll dictate what you need to wear.
Did you go fishing?
Not at Casey, but I did go at Davis.
So when you're living in this camp style, so obviously getting along with other people is really critical. Like, you can be really wonderful at your job, but if you are not very good at forming relationships and getting along with people and being a team player, I'd imagine it would be, you probably wouldn't be selected to go down there. So is that a fair comment?
That's 100% correct, yeah. They'd take someone who would fit into the group rather than going there. Now they could be the best at what they do, but that the part of it where you can join us together as one is more important than that.
Yeah, well, they got so lucky when they met you, because you've got an amazing background with your plumbing. You can go into that if you'd like to, but you've told me a bit of your background, Jeff, and then you're so easy to get along with people. So did you have to chip in and do the dishes and grow the food and all that sort of stuff?
Yeah, no, that's, we did. I suppose, your work took up probably, I don't know, 50% of your time, but the other part of the time you'd be helping as a community. You'd be cleaning the floors and helping in the kitchen, and then we'd have a garbage runs and all sorts of things, and then there'd be activities, like for Christmas and New Year and all that sort of stuff. We all help each other get organised, and then also we helped the scientists in their field research, which was pretty special.
That would be so interesting. Do you have any stories on that to share?
Yeah, I helped Clive the seal man. He was doing the research on the seals. We helped him put a camera on one of these elephant seals' head.
Oh, how cool is that?
Yeah, no, it was pretty good.
So how big was the elephant seal?
Oh, probably 2.5 ton, I suppose.
Are they the ones that blow their nose out?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Scary?
They're not the prettiest things, but they're an amazing creature. They tranquilized it and sedated it, because they can be very aggressive. And then, we shaved the top of his head and epoxied this camera on the top of his head and let him recover, and then off he went. And they track them. They track the seals, and find out about what they do and where they go.
So what's the name of that seal?
That one's the elephant seal.
No, has he got a name?
Oh, Clive.
No, Clive's the seal man.
Yeah.
What's the seal's name?
Oh, we did have a seal we called Cyril, because Cyril had come up to the workshop, and he actually broke into the workshop, and we had trouble getting him out.
Because they're like puffy dogs, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah, they're funny.
So how'd you get him out?
Well, we just had to scare him out, pretty much.
I wish you got that on video. It's not on YouTube anywhere, is it?
I do think I have a bit of footage of it.
That's priceless. Mm. Did you have any other stories about where you've assisted the scientists?
Yeah, they had, in that case, they had the moss ladies. They had a thing called an octocopter that was a drone, would fly over and pick up moss and bring it back so they could test with their microscopes and find out information about what's happened all those years ago.
Wow, see, I picture moss growing in rainforests, and I know that moss is hundreds and thousands of years old. It takes a very long time to form. I can't picture moss growing. I just picture it only white in Antarctica. But are there moist, warmer areas where moss grows?
Yeah, that's one example. And then it had the glaciologists who were mapping the ice down there, working out how thick it all is. So that was a 5-year program. It was called the CAPS program. That was happening at the time.
I guess all that data feeds into climate change and all that sort of statistics. Yep.
Yeah. And then we'd have to go out and out there in the Zodiac with amongst the icebergs, having a look at the penguin colonies and whatnot. That was like a field activity, I suppose you could say.
Are they the kind of penguins that are in Happy Feet, or are they the fairy? Oh, not the fairy. What are they called? Little penguins now.
They're Dell penguins. They were the main ones in Casey.
Are they the ones with a bit of a yellow?
No, they're the emperors. They're more up at Mawson.
What's the range of temperatures, Jeff, that you're living in?
It'd be probably from, say, 0 to -50.
Yeah. So that's got to create some real potentially critical and life-threatening situations that could change in just a blink of an eye. So,
Very much so, yeah.
What stories have you got to share in preparing for that?
Well, we had a scenario where we had to go and reenact an emergency out at the ice runway at Wilkins, the Blue Ice Runway, and the scenario was that I was in a ute that I was driving and smashed into a grader, and I got trapped. And then the grader driver, he had minor injuries, and the passenger, he also had minor injuries, and we had to act it out, and the doctor had to do like a triage and work out who to work on first and all the rest of it. So, but my injuries were life-threatening, so I had to really act it out, and the doctor had to diagnose exactly what was wrong with me.
How was your acting on that particular day? Did you win a Logie? Or an Academy Award?
Well, Kate was the doctor. She said I'd done very well because she had to diagnose, and she got it diagnosed right, so she done well.
Geez, that's awesome. Have you been down to the community centre here and put yourself forward to be an actor, lead role?
Well, now that I get on a bit longer, like getting to the point where I don't have to work so much, that could be on the cards.
Yeah, I think you've got a potential there. I might be sitting in greatness here for an Academy Award. And so with the changing environment and how it's quickly, the weather can change. And I've lived in the snow and I understand, you know, 1 minute it can be sunny and then the clouds come across and a blizzard hits. Did you have much experience with blizzards hitting you down in Antarctica?
Yes, quite a few times. One of the most memorable times is we had to go out to the Wilkes Blue Ice Runway and decommission all the buildings and that the infrastructure that's out there. And well, going through those processes, we had to drain all the water out of anything that had water in it so it wouldn't freeze and damage pumps and seals and whatnot, and then push all these buildings that are on sleds up into a point where they won't get buried. They're buried underneath the snow during the winter, winter months, and getting towards the tail end, the weather started turning nasty. We had a convoy of we had two big case tractors with low loaders. There was two of those, and there was two Haglunds, and then on the low loaders there was like a D, I think it was a D6 bulldozer and a Ute, and then there was all this other equipment on this other low loader. And so we're heading off, and you could not see anything. You could not see a meter in front of you. And so we're just following the lead case tractor, and then the two Haglunds were sort of in the middle, and then you had the other low loader. So we going through this ice and snow, and it's just relentless. And the trip took must have been the best part of 6 hours.
I was just thinking, you must be trailing so slow, for safety. Yeah,
yeah.
And so when it's a whiteout like that, you'd lose the actual track. So were you travelling by GPS?
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah, no, the tractors had big lights and whatnot. And, it does get like that where you've just got to trust the instruments.
Yeah. So you came out of it unscathed?
Oh,
you didn't lose a man?
No, we just took our time and we got back safe they put dinner aside for us so we could have the feed when we got back to base.
Yeah. So what happened when you returned back to the mainland after your time in Antarctica? Were you a different person? Had it changed you?
Yeah, it does. It's sort of, because when you're down in that environment, there's always something new. There's always something going on, or there's, it's just so varied. And when you come back to a normal life, you sort of miss it a bit, and you can get a little bit lost. But I've put my hand up to go back down again, so that was something to look forward to. So I followed up with another season at Davis Station.
The following year,
yeah.
So Davis is that a larger station or more remote or?
No, they're about the same size. It's in a different sort of environment. The Davis is on a based around the Vestervold Hills, so you've got a lot of rock, and that, whereas Casey's more based on an ice plateau, so it's a different scenarios.
Okay.
They are different in that way.
Did you find that the wildlife was different?
The wildlife was pretty much the same. You had your elephant seals and your penguins and your killer whales, but no, that wasn't much different really.
Okay, random question. Do you have insects in Antarctica?
Well, it's funny you say that. We did have a bit of a problem with some flies at Casey, and we had a program to eradicate them, but there was only about eight or so at the time. But yeah, that was. But besides that, no.
Oh, so the flies would have travelled with the people and the supplies.
Well, that's what we assume. It was, we, like I said, we were monitoring them, and we were slowly winning a bit. And that had been bit of a ongoing thing for a little while. Yeah.
Wow.
They were mainly in the plant room underneath the kitchen.
Yeah.
It wasn't many, but that was one of the things we had to do, was spray fly spray and try and get rid of them.
Yeah. And there's people still down at Antarctica now, obviously, continuing this work.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, the program, I think, now is getting bigger and bigger, because a lot of the infrastructure now is getting old and needs upgrading, especially with OH&S, Occupational Health and Safety. There's a lot of things down there that in today's society wouldn't cut the mustard.
So would you recommend this opportunity if someone's at home and they are looking for that next adventure or a career step, or just a sidestep and a break from the normality? Would you recommend that they considered applying for a job at somewhere like Antarctica?
Oh, yeah, for sure. It's been a great experience. It's something that's pretty special and, very, very exciting. And you do learn a lot of stuff from what's about the environment and the animals and whatnot.
Jeff, thank you so much for coming in. Is there anything else that you'd like to say before we sign off for today?
Well, thank you, Justine, and having this chat, it rekindles a lot of memories and good times.
Yeah. Oh, actually, I wanted to ask you one thing, because we haven't said it, is how can people learn more about what you did? Have you got a blog or a website or anything?
Yeah, I do have a blog. It's called Blogger Antarctica Tull and Ice.
Okay, well, I'll share that link, and there's images and things on there, aren't there?
There is, yeah.
And are there any images of the American poo bricks?
You probably could Google it, I'd say.
Would we Google American poo bricks?
I've never tried.
I'm fascinated. I'm thinking there's a hidden industry there that we just haven't tapped into yet.
Yeah, well, you've got a point.
Okay, thanks very much, Jeff.
Okay, thank you.
Bye for now.
Bye now. Ba-da-ba-da. Do 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 do